Wednesday, the 24th of March.
24th, is it?
2010, and I'm interviewing Mary Perich. Can I get you to just state your name and your address and your date of birth and place of birth? So your name is?
Mary Perich. I was Becca Rich before I got married, and I was born 1919 on 6th of August, and I came from the island of Kortula. The village is named Zhernova.
And where are you currently living?
At Unit 11-9 Caraway, New Point Clair.
So how old were you? What was life like where you grew up? Can you describe the... Was it an island?
Yeah, it was an island. It's actually Kortula is a town, and we're the next village, up, like little town up from Kortula, about 10 minutes walk going down, because it's steep, but going up would take longer.
How many of you were there in your family?
Well, there was two brothers and two sisters, and my younger brother was born here. He's 18 here.
And where were you in the family?
I was the third. My sister was the eldest, then my brother, then me, and then Jimmy. He was the youngest. He was the one that went in the army. He was in New Guinea for about 4.5 years.
And your parents' names?
They were Katie and Steve Beckeridge. My mum was surgering before she got married.
And so what age were you when you migrated to Australia? And what were the circumstances around that?
Well, we were 10-year-old. And you know, funny part about it, when my dad knew a bloke in Broken Hill, and he made us English naturalised before we got here, because the price of the fare was half price by doing that. And if you go and inquire at immigration, they won't find me under Yugoslavia. That was the country where we came from. It's England.
That work, do you know?
Yeah, you know, I went to get my I want to go to Europe, and I told him where I was born and all that. He went, looked. He said, "We got no records of your passport or anything." Then I said, "By the way, I said we came as a British subject." He went back within a minute. He was back with all this. He said, "You're under England, not under." The country you were born.
How old were you when you
migrated? 10-year-old, that was when I came out here.
Do you know, and so why did you migrate?
Well, that came 1924. Actually, he was first in on slippers in Western Australia. Then he came during the Depression to Broken Hill, and he couldn't get a job. My uncle told him, look after, do the cooking and look after us, free board it will be. So he was doing that. And then he borrowed the money to bring us out. Then when we got to Broken Hill, all of us, I didn't even go to school when I got here because my mum wasn't well, and we had boarders to pay for the money that he earned in the mines wasn't enough. So we had boarders to pay off the trip, you know, that brought us out here.
How did you come out?
By a transfer boat.
And can you remember any of that journey?
Oh, yeah, it was very smooth. It was lovely. It took us nearly a month to get to Adelaide. It was very nice.
And what was the food like on the boat?
Oh, it was marvellous. Oh, it was very good. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it would have had fun running around the boat.
Oh, golly, be my brother. You couldn't see him anywhere. He used to go with the men that used to do the laundry and all that, and I think they used to get the clothes and, you know, put them in certain places. He used to go with them where they get the food. Oh, he used to come frozen sometimes with them. They loved Jimmy. They loved him. And he used to bring food up with him too.
What else on the boat there? Were you sick or anything?
None of us were ever sick. There was a woman she didn't stop vomiting the day she was on the boat, and they got her, she was supposed to go to Melbourne, but they got her off in Fremantle because she wouldn't have survived. She was she was lifeless by the time we got to Fremantle. And then they put her, I don't know how, they got her out, but she didn't stop for 1 minute.
Were there other people from your town or from the area? No,
I don't think there was anyone.
From Yugoslavia?
I don't think there was anyone. I think there might be one lady with a son. I think there was a woman with a son, but God knows, they got off at Fremantle too. So
you came to Broken Hill. Yeah. So you would have got off the boat at Circular Quay?
No, we got in Adelaide. And then we took a train to Broken Hill.
And can you remember what your thoughts were when you kind of would have...
You know, we were actually had a cabin above the propeller, you know, in the noise. And we got used to that noise. When we got to Adelaide, I couldn't go to sleep. And I kept telling my sister, what is it? What can I go to? He said, you missed the noise of the propeller. We got so used to it that we couldn't.
And you got to Broken Hill, and it's a very different landscape, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Can you describe it?
Oh, it was completely different, you know, everything about it. But even there, if I see some news coming from about Broken Hill or in the newspaper, oh, I jump at it. Nobody's allowed to say anything because I grew up there, and there's something of me that I always think of Broken Hill.
How long were you in Broken?
10 years.
And you mentioned to me earlier that there were a lot of Yugoslavs.
Oh, yeah, many, many. I'll show you the photo of how many when the priest came from in front of the church. And I think there's about 3 of us alive out of those people. Well, they were much older than me. Any.
Can you remember any of those names?
Oh, yes, there's a lot of them that... I think there's only about... There's one in Warriewood that is still alive, and one in Adelaide, she's in a nursing home. They're the only two that I think are living still out of that photo.
And what sort of work was going on in Broken Hill?
Well, they were all miners. And us women, you know, they hardly done anything. We did, me and my mum, because we had boarders. And we had to wait, you know. I used to get up about 4 o'clock, do their lunches, and then give them breakfast, and they went to the morning shift. There was morning shift, afternoon and night shift. And if they worked night shift, I used to wait till them to they get home, give them their dinner, and they go to bed. Which my mum, she couldn't take to the climate. For the older, it's extreme different to where we came from.
How is it different?
Oh, it's drier and, you know.
Hot.
And hot, everything was different about it. I was told the only Katoomba is the only town that's similar to our climate.
So it's quite cool where you grew up.
Oh, yes, yes.
Would have been difficult to adjust for someone.
Yeah, somebody older. We children, we didn't mind it, you know. We got on all right.
What were your parents like?
My dad, but he was a hard worker, you know, and all that. But I think the way I look at it, I couldn't be like that, you know. I was strict with my children. I had 2. I was very strict with them, but I couldn't go as far as my father did. I couldn't do that. He only had to look at you. That was enough. Well, with Mum, we could get away with many things.
Why was he like that? Was that the culture?
That's a culture, yeah.
So the Yugoslav man from that era?
Yeah. They are very strict, yes.
Why is that? Where is that? Are you familiar with?
Well, they think, you see, my sister, she left home when she was, soon after we got her, she had a boyfriend. He was a nice boy, but it was during the depression. And she wanted to get married to him. And Dad said, no. He said, if you get married, it's a depression, it's very hard. Leave it till things get better. So one night she picked up her gear and left. And then she wanted to marry him, and Dad wouldn't sign the, you know, marriage. Even the Lord Mayor came, the priest came, begging them, no, no, no. And then Mum heard that she was expecting a baby. Then Mum started to cry. She said, if she bring this child into the world unmarried, it will be 100 times worse than what she gone away. So he signed it. And you know, for my brother Steve was about 7 years old when he knew that he had another sister. Nobody was allowed to mention her at home. Back home, if a girl is going with the boy, that's where I come from, and then if he leaves her, she'll never get married. Nobody would look at her after that. And it's a very old, he was very old fashioned, you know.
You left Broken Hill at, where did you go from there as a family, or did you?
No, me and my mum and younger brother came to Liverpool. My dad, once we came for a holiday to Sydney, and then he bought 5 acres land in Epsom Road. And he kept paying it off and all that. And then Mum and said to Dad, how about if me and Mary and Steve goes up on the farm? There was a house on it. So we went up, me and my mum, and I think they came about a year later.
So where's Epsom Road? What suburb?
That's Liverpool. That's across the bridge. I think Epsom Road goes from the bridge, you know, straight to Millipira and all that. Yeah.
So why did you come for a holiday?
Oh, we just came, you know, everybody was going, and I think it was just a couple of weeks. We stayed with a friend.
So the Croatians were here.
That
would have been a motivation.
Oh, yes, we wouldn't come if we didn't know anyone. We knew this Pavlovich lady. She was really very dear to me till the day she died.
What was her full name?
Tera Pavlovich. She had a daughter here at Umina, and we often see one another. So now she's a lovely girl.
So how old were you? You were 20 then?
Yeah, about 20 when we came to Sydney.
When you came to Liverpool?
Liverpool, yes.
And your father stayed in Broken
Hill? Yes, yes. And my brother was in the army, and my older brother, he was doing fencing in the bush on a sheep station and all that. Then when the crop was put in, we put about 7,000 or 8,000 plants in. Then they came up.
So talk to me about how you learnt farming.
We went to Kapramata. They were doing a lot of, and my mum went there and looked at it, you know, look how they were doing things. She said, how about if we started? So we got a bloke to, you know, do the ground, and then we did the beds, me and my mum, and planted the tomatoes. They were wonderful. Whoever came, they couldn't believe it. But it had a lot to do with the new soil, you know. If you've got a new soil, they do go up very well. And the crop was marvellous. It was very good.
Now, you mentioned that you were the first. Talk about the first, that information you talked to me about earlier.
Yeah, well, this doctor asked my brother who were the two women that put the first crop of tomatoes in the Liverpool. And he said the younger woman used to build a wheelbarrow up the hill and all that. And Steve said, that was my mother and my sister. And he couldn't believe it. He said, of all the people, that it was them too. Yeah.
Can you describe, so you learnt in Cabramatta,
right? Yeah.
You'll understand, I need some detail. Can you remember the families that were growing food there?
Oh, there were a lot. There were Vitsaliches. There were a lot of
Just a few.
A lot. There were a lot of Yugoslav. I can't, you know, but there were, oh, there were a terrible lot of Bonnie Rikasing, actually, it was, just a little bit up Kapramata way.
So can you talk, how do you feel about talking to me about the process of your tomato growing? I mean, I'm familiar with it, like just what you had to do psychically. And what you did, and did you bring people in, or like it's a lot of work?
Oh no, we never got anyone. Me and my mum did the pruning, did the, you know, watering and all that. When you put them in, most you have to prune them, you know, and tie them up, and then you have to water them and put manure in between the plants and all that.
What stake? How did you use the stakes? What were they made from?
Oh, you order them. There are places that you can buy them.
So, where'd you get your water from?
Oh, we had a city water, but we had a stream down in the middle of the paddock. You know, it was always there. Summer and winter, I think, must have been from the ground coming up. That they couldn't even, trucks couldn't go up because they would bogged in the middle of the paddock.
How did Liverpool look then?
Oh, it's much different now to when I lived there. But we loved it. I loved it. I have a little push bike and I used to go up and do the shopping and everything with it.
So talk to me about the road. Like you had a push, you got around by push bike, and what was it? Horse and cart? What was it? Was it sulky or?
Oh well.
What year was that?
That was 1938. Mm. 1938.
So before the war.
Oh yes, yeah. Actually, I got married, and I was pregnant with my daughter when I heard on the news. I said to my husband, I said the England declared war. He said, really? I said, yeah. I was married when the war broke out.
So we'll just get back to your mum, then we'll move to your marriage. So you used to ride your bike. I want you to be more descriptive. What was the shopping like? How did you get your food and your supplies?
Well, I used to go on the push bike and get what we need, you know. My brother, Steve, he used to sell newspapers, and he used to go up and do, and he used to...
Sorry, it's your hands now with the tissue.
He used to do a bit of shopping too for us. He was only young, he was about 11 year old, but he was good.
And what else did you do? Describe a typical day.
Else can you do when you got a big crop of tomatoes? We were always there from morning to night. We had no leisure and didn't go out. We just worked from morning to night.
How did you cope with that?
Oh, I cope well. You know, ever since I came to Australia, I worked hard. In Broken Hill and then in Liverpool. Then when I got married, it was just the same old thing, work on a farm.
So let's talk about when you met your husband and what his name is. And
yeah, Nicola Perich it was, and he had a farm in Warriewood. I knew him before that. We got engaged and I sent the ring back. You know, funny thing about my dad, I was engaged to him in Broken Hill. And we had a garden, the blocks were very large in Broken Hill, you know. And we had quite a bit of a garden. And I was watering the garden and my husband, that was later on, he was up on the veranda. And my father came out and he told him, this is the first and last time I saw you talk to her alone. He said, if you want to talk to her alone, you marry her and take her. And you're not. I was down, you know, and he was up, and I wasn't allowed to talk to him. When we want to get to the picture, the whole row was my relatives. Yeah. I wasn't early. My sister, my brothers, my father, my mother, everybody was there.
It was a family event.
Yeah.
And you were Catholic?
Yes.
Did you go to church?
Oh, yeah. I went to school for a while there. My brothers too. My son and my daughter, they all went to Catholic schools.
And so let's say so you got, I'm interested in you sent the ring back. What happened?
Oh, I just, you know, I was in Bracken Hill, he was in Warriewood, and I don't know, I just thought, I just want to get in, so I just sent it to him. And then when we got to Liverpool, he came to see me. And then I thought to myself, even that better than living. Well, you respect a man. He was a very unusual bloke, you know. The more you do, the more they expect of you. You know, this is, I've been here now over 10 years. And to tell you the truth, the first time in my life that I feel free. I'm on my own and I love it, you know. I can do what I want to. I can go where I want to. For the first time in my life, my son, he's a great, oh, he's a wonderful. There isn't a day that he doesn't ring me up and pops in. If I want to go anywhere, he takes me. But he said to me something Monday, and I said, listen, Tony, I said, all my life I've been pushed around. Don't you start on me. Yeah, I have a daughter. She's a wonderful, you know. She got two boys. And I've got a lovely family. 5 grandsons, which I worship. Once in Dubai. And when I was 90, he came from Dubai to be on my birthday. He's gone back now. But I said to my son, I said, listen, Tony, don't think of doing anything because I won't be here. I didn't want nothing. I said, I'm going to Queensland. And I said, I'll be there with the boys. When I got there, they said we were going to get to McDonald's. I said, all right. We were walking, and then in the distance, I saw my brother and his wife, and I started to cry. I never dreamed that. And his family, his daughter, his son. And I couldn't believe it. I started to cry. The bloke, Gary, his department with my one of my grandsons, he said, don't cry, Baba, don't cry. But I said, wow, what's going on? And my grandson, Dean Lucan, he hired a cruiser and got all these relatives and friends on the boat. And I thought to myself, oh, my God. I said, what did you do? And he got the, and I didn't know anything about it, you know. And he got this, and, they were, and then we went across, you know. And then he said to the people, there were about 50 of them, I'll show you the file. And he said, now you can order whatever you want to. It's on the menu. He said, you don't have to, you know, anything you like. And then we had dinner, then went to the boat, then when we got back to the boat, there was a huge cake there. And Dean gave a speech and all that, and I thought to myself, gee, you know. And even 2 friends from Bayview came along. When I saw them, I nearly, and isn't that funny, she went, one of the girls was coughing, and she said, I wouldn't like to go to Mary's birthday party coughing. Let's go to this chemi shop and give, you know, ask for. So she asked the girl, she said, could you give me something for this cough? I'm going to a birthday party. And this girl said, you're not going to Mary Perich's birthday party, are you? In this territory, you know. He said, yes, why? Because I'm going there too. It's my grandchildren's mother. And how little world is that they just happened to go to the chemist shop that. And I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought we were going to McDonald's and that's it. I had a wonderful day. One, my brother's daughter-in-law, Pam, she took the video. I got a video here that she took. And she says she had the most wonderful time of her life. She said it was beautiful, Auntie Mary. Yeah. And that's the life, you know.
Sounds like it was a great day.
Oh, it was wonderful, you know, having all my grandchildren there. And when I saw my brother, you know, living in Ingleburn, coming to Queensland with his family, you know, his married family, their wives and their husband, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. I started to cry like anything when I saw them. And because nobody told me anything, I think it was a surprise. My daughter will be 70 on Tuesday, and she's coming to Sydney. And I said to Tony, he rang me this morning, I said that Dean rang me on my mobile, and I said, I don't know where I was. And I don't know whether he's having something. Of course, he's going to have something for his mother on Tuesday. And I said, I want that. She's be 70 on Tuesday. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Even I told my doctor, he can't believe it.
So when you would have been at your birthday, you would have got a sense of what your life was, like that reflection on your life.
Yeah, darling, yeah.
You know, by the people and how much those people love you, probably.
Yeah. Dean was saying, he said, Baba, when you were little, young, he said there was no refrigerator, there was no TVs, there was nothing, was there? I said, no, everything changed since then.
Do you remember, like, in just when you were in Liverpool, who the mayor was, or do you remember any of your word?
No, I wouldn't know. Yeah. No.
Can you describe when you got married?
Yeah.
Can you talk about where that was and where you bought your dress and what happened?
Well, we bought a dress in Liverpool somewhere, and we got married in the Catholic Church in Liverpool. And then that night, that was the best man. He took us to Warriewood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you said something about Colombo Perich and your father. Is that right?
My husband brought Colombo Perich to Australia.
Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Well, we were great friends. And his wife, I think she died back home. I think she had a heart attack, and he got her in a car, took her to Dubrovnik, but before she got there, she died. And he got married again, but we were great friends. He was like a brother to me, really, Colombo was. Yeah, he brought him out, all glory be. I think it was 1939 that he came out, Colombo.
And what was your husband's name again?
Nicola Perich.
And who was the oldest? Colombo or Nicola?
I think they were about the same age. I think they were around, because they know one another quite well. They were relatives too.
Were they brothers?
No, they were from brothers' children.
Cousins?
Yes, they were cousins.
So your husband had land at Warriewood. What sort of land did he farm there?
Oh, glass houses. They were all glass houses over there. I don't think very few grey outside stuff.
And so he brought Colombo to, what happened there?
Well, when he brought him out, he went to Kunich's in cherry picking. And my husband actually went there, and he said for 3 years he was only getting £3 a week and board. And he worked there for 3 years. Then he came to Warriewood, bought a farm with another another man, and then Colombo his brother wanted to come out here, and Nicola made things, you know, went and got him things ready for him to. But in the meantime, his brother went hunting and he lost the eye, so Colombo took Liboria, actually his name was, took his brother Colombo and he came with his brother passport and all that. And that was said, this solicitor that actually was a personal friend, he said when he died, he said, by the way, he said he was an illegal immigrant because he came with somebody else's.
Yeah. He came under somebody else's name, or
His brother's. He took his brother's name because his brother couldn't come because he lost the eye. That time, if you got anything against you, if you had anything to do with law, or if you got any kind of sickness, no, why would you come out here? And not only we have to go to Dubrovnik, then when we got to Naples, there was a doctor's and all that again. And not only our doctor, the government doctor was, you know. And if there was anything wrong with you, no, why would you be able to come to this country? Different. It's different now.
So when you were married, was it a big wedding?
Not really. I'll show you the photo, how many there were at my wedding. Not really very.
I'm just moving so we get the noise this way rather than that way.
Yes.
Sorry, I've got to think of these things. And where did you live when you got married?
In Morrywood. We live in Morrywood. And we had about 20, 30 glass houses. And then my son became really, very ill later on. He had MS. And he went to Maury for 6 weeks, I think. And I looked after living glass houses on my own. I had two children. It was very hard. Oh, love. But everybody was wondering how in the world, you know, that I'd done that on my own. But I did it, you know. I remember when the crop came, there were big kerosene tins which you put your tomatoes in. I didn't carry one. I carried two in each hand. There was a friend, Guberin, he used to get hold of his head. He said, "Child of mine, you're gonna rip your hands off." He said, "Why do you do that?" But what could I do? He wasn't well, and I got to do it.
It's amazing what women do, really.
Yeah, that's right.
And you were quite isolated, were you?
Oh, there were a lot of friends around, but everyone was working. Everyone had work to do. When you're on a farm, you got no time. Actually, only weekends. There were three of us. There was Guberinus, Marciola and Katica Guberina, and Maria and Jozef Kalajic. We used to go to one another's place. They used to come one weekend at my home. Then we go to Katie's, then to Maria's. And that was our routine. That was the only entertainment we had. She couldn't do much, this Maria. She couldn't play cards. We taught her. And our three women, she used to play, three men, we used to beat them. Oh, they used to get real wild about it.
What did you play?
Oh, the Yugoslav, it was Briskula, Treon, Treseta, we call it. It's actually originated from back home. And we taught this lady and I had to play, and she played well too.
So were you in Morrywood for how long?
Oh, I was there about 10 years I was there.
Yeah.
And then we came, we sold it because he was, he couldn't do nothing. He was, he was like getting paralyzed. Then we bought a house in Park Avenue, Burwood, and I have lodging there. Then I went from one week to another. Then I look after the, you know, clean, wash the linen and look after the people that were there. That went on for many years still.
So did you say your husband had MS?
Yes.
Yes. So you ran the farm?
Yeah, I did. The last few years, and it was getting very hard with two children and all that. And then come home, do all the housework, do the cooking and all that. Actually, sometimes it was 11 o'clock before I could go to bed and then get up early in the morning.
Wow. What were you growing on the farm?
Tomatoes, glasshouse tomatoes.
Glasshouse tomatoes. Mm. And what market? They went to market?
Oh, yes. It was a good price, too, because nobody else had them at that time, only what was brought from the glasshouse. And after the crop gone, we used to put peas or beans in it, you know.
So you grew on the glasshouses because of the soil?
Well, it wasn't actually, we grew them because it was a good, you know.
Efficient.
Yes, it was.
You went from outdoor to indoor, sort of. You went from.
Liverpool was outdoors. And then.
So can you talk about that transition a bit?
It was a lot different. We used to put lime on the top to keep the heat out. Oh, it was hot inside like a furnace. Imagine all glass, you know, on the top round it. It was, then we used to put lime, you know, when the summer comes, we used to put lime to keep the heat out. But it was a hard work, very hard work it was. But I never thought to myself, isn't that hard, you know? It has to be done and you just do it.
What were you feeling?
Oh, you don't feel nothing. Because you don't seem to care about anything much, you know. When you know what's today is going to be tomorrow and the day after tomorrow and so on. Nothing will change, you know. And you just grow up with it.
What do you think? What are you thinking? Like, you get angry?
Now I have to think, why? Why did I do all that? Why did I let them stamp on me? Why didn't I fight? You know, why didn't I say something? No, I just wonder today how these, they don't tolerate nobody or anyone to die, people. And I thought to myself, if those people were in my place, what would they do when I was young? I had no life in my life.
When you were with your mother in Liverpool, was there a sense of freedom with the children?
Yes, yeah, it was. We laughed, we joked, we even played cards at night. Oh, I had a wonderful time with my mum. My mum was, when my mum passed away, part of me went too. But I don't know, when my dad passed away, I was sad, but I couldn't shed a tear. Which I know when I used to go with my mum to Sydney, and if I go to Sydney, it always comes back to me. I was here with my mum. And, you know, I was really down. And there was a chappie that, he had a girlfriend that lived in one of my flats. And I was very down. And, you know, one day he said to me, you know what? He said, you're just feeling sorry for yourself. You're not feeling sorry for your mom. She is in peace. And you're the one that you feel. And you know, he got me out of this depression that nobody else could have done.
The grief.
Yes, that's right. And the way he went for me, you wouldn't be. And I didn't know him that well. But Margaret said to me later, she was, I think, in. She was working in Parramatta. She used to tell them what to do around, like a forewoman or something. And she said to me, Mary, please, don't take him in, you know, he's doing it for your own good. Because he said, you can't go on the way you are.
Tough love.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what he said. You're not feeling sorry for your mother. It's you that you're feeling sorry for. You know, he snapped at me. And, you know, he did get me out of.
How long were you in that grief?
Oh, for a couple of years. Even now, we're not in love. Because we got on. I don't think the life I had with her that we ever had a crossword with one another. Never.
Were you like your mother?
Well, I don't know. Whether.
Tell me about your mother. What sort of woman was she?
Oh, she was a wonderful woman. She'll help anyone who, you know, needs help. And she was hard worker. She worked all her life. She had a hard life. You know that they bought a land up at Cecil Park. My father was always said he was sick or something. And one day they brought a load of manure, and she was taking this manure into the bed, you know, tomato, and she collapsed. And, you know, she had a stroke, and she died 2 days later. And they brought her from the farm, they carried her into the house, and she died in the house.
At Cecil Park?
Yes. And she died working.
How old was she?
She was 58. Yeah.
And how old were you then?
Oh, I must have been about 20, around 30.
And you were living at
home? I was married with 2 children, yeah.
And what happened? Where was the funeral for your mother?
In Liverpool. She was buried in Liverpool Cemetery. Yeah.
Was it a big funeral?
Oh, yes. She was really liked. You know, funny part about it, I said to some friends, I said, would you go back to Warriewood and get me some money? I said, I want to pay for my mum's funeral. You know, at that time it was £50 for the funeral. And now it's run into thousands and thousands of dollars. £50 was the funeral.
And so when you said Cecil Park, when did they move to Cecil Park?
After Liverpool. They sold Liverpool.
How many acres at Liverpool?
There were only 5.
Can you remember how much they paid for the property there?
I think it was about £500 at that time. I don't think it was even that about five. And he got over 5,000 for it. They didn't believe in that he got that much, you know, 5,000.
What was the address? What was your address there?
I'd be just Epsom Road, Liverpool. I think Epsom Road goes down from the bridge right there, and it goes to Millipira and all that. Yes, banks there.
And they moved to Cecil Park?
Yes, that was a big acreage. I think there was about 20, 30 acres there. I think when my mother passed away there on that land, then my father brought my mother's sister out, and he married her, and she brought her son out. And there was a lot of trouble between my father and them. I don't know what went on. Anyway, when he died, I think he left a certain amount, you know, just something little to each one of us. And Steve, my younger brother, he left most of it to my younger brother. But she contested the will, and she got the lot, you know.
What was her name?
Carmelina. And she contested the will and she died. I don't know. And then her son died. Then her daughter-in-law died. And they had one of the girls. She had 3 kidneys when she was born, and only one would function. And now she's on this kidney machine, I think 3 or 4 hours a day. She was a nice girl. Anyway, they sold this property for nearly $6 million.
Recently?
Yeah, her grandchildren.
So they got all the money?
All the money, and we never got a farthing out of it. Not a farthing. Yeah. The people that never did, actually he sold 5 acres to bring her son out and his wife. And I think there was a daughter, then the others were born here. But we never got a farthing from them, none of us. Not one of us. You know what hurts me? My brother Jimmy, that was in the army, he only held 2 shillings for himself, and the rest, he loved his mother. And the rest, he said, it goes to his mother. At least he could have left something they could have give something to Jimmy, but he didn't get nothing either. In all the years that he was in the army, she was getting that money.
Your mother?
Yes.
Is Jimmy not alive, of course?
He died, yeah. Oh, he was a wreck when he came from New Guinea. He had dermatitis all across his body, from neck down everywhere. And he had malaria, and he caught that in the bones, you know, that disease. And he was a great smoker. There was a next door neighbor that went to New Guinea too. His name was Watch, the health service station. And he written to his dad. He said, if it wasn't for Jimmy, I don't know how we wouldn't have no morale at all. He said he sings, he jokes, he plays the mouth organ. He said he keeps us alive. And then the poor bloke, he got scraped typhus and he died. And that really knocked my brother really bad when this friend of his died. Next door neighbor he was. He was in charge of this regiment.
So what year did Jimmy die?
Oh, glory.
How old was he when he died?
He was about 68, I think. Around that, I think.
What happened to him when he came back from the war? Like, what happened?
He bought a little farm at, I think it's Ingleburn somewhere, and he lived there with his wife. He got a son, he's a dentist now. His daughter was a school teacher. She actually went to England and then came back, and I think they told me she went to Dubai for the government. She was a well-educated girl. She's still there. He had two wonderful children.
How did Colombo get... He was the landowner, from what I gather from other stories.
He is very wealthy, yes.
How did that... Do you know much about how it all happened?
Well, he was buying farm... You know, when that Oran Park, it was on the auction, and his wife told him, you'd cut on me. She was a great friend of mine. When she had a flu, she used to come and live with us up at Liverpool before she got married. And... she told him, he said, go and buy it. So Colombo was telling me this. He said when he got home, he said to his wife, he said he owns everything to her. And he said, she said, well, did you buy it? He said, no. He said, we couldn't agree. She said, go back and buy it. Go back and buy it. And he said, I was forced to go back and I bought it. And he told me that she was the force behind it. And they bought land and... Then it wasn't very expensive to buy land. Now look how, in Warriewood, $2 million an acre. Where then you could have buy it for peanuts, you know.
What was her name again?
Jutka Perich.
Tell me about her a bit.
Oh, she was a nice. She actually came together with Colombo to this country. They were on the same boat. And she fell in love with him straight away. But he was a handsome man. Oh, I got a fighter, the married fighter, you know. And he was really handsome. And her name was Begovic before she married him. And they got married and...
Did any of her family come out here?
Her brother brought her out. Actually, her brother, he passed away too. And his wife passed away. But...
So what sort of a person was she?
She was a lovely lady. To me, we were really great friends. When I went for a trip to Europe, she was there. And they couldn't treat me more than if I was their own sister or, you know. They took me everywhere and I had a wonderful time with them. Because I went to see my husband's relatives, and then they were just there next door to them, you know. And they were lovely. They were wonderful people. And I never forget them, you know. And Ron and Tony, they are wonderful. we went to, I think it was the club that I met you. So I said to Tony, I said, this is my son Tony. And Tony Perry said to my son, he said, are you from Central Coast? You're the one that your name is always on the news. And my son said, I wish.
That's funny.
And my son said, yes, I wish.
So Colombo, what sort of person was he?
Oh, he was a nice bloke. He was lovely. He actually, you know that club, Austral Club?
The Austral Bowling or Leppington?
Leppington Club. Actually, they have every year trophy in his name play there. And it goes to charities.
What's your connection with the club?
Oh, just, you know, a lot of them has passed away. It's just friends, you know, we were all settlers. And we didn't give a stuff about where they come from, as long as they spoke our language. We didn't, religion, I respect all religions. And religion never play a part in my life or my children, you know. It's just the person you are that counts. But a lot of them, they're so political and all that, which I never was. I was never political. Neither was my dad, my family. My two children never knew there was a Serbia or Croatia exist, because at that time was Yugoslavia. Once my son said to me, Mom, we went to watch soccer, and there was a big brawl down. And before that, he said, I'll go and get a drink. I said, all right, love. He came up, he said, Mum, look at them down there. Do you know what's all going on? I said, no, what? He said, one of them said, why are we fighting? We're all brothers. And one of them said, he said, you're not my brother, I'm a Croatian. And he said, Mum, where is Croatia? I said, it's a state in Yugoslavia. He said, isn't that silly? That's all he said to me. He said, isn't that silly, they're fighting about that? He said, that same, if I say I'm from New South Wales, and they say, you're from Australia. No, I'm not from Australia, I'm from... He said, that's the same thing, isn't it? So what can you know...
So how important has religion been to you? Are you a spiritual person?
No. Being in Broken Hill, you know, people they don't go to church. I did go to, you know, a funny part about it. I knew the nuns in Broken Hill, and we were great. You know, they respect me, and I respect them tremendously. And my brother was going there one morning, this Jimmy that was in the army, said, come on, hurry up, I'm going to be late for school. Come on, do my lunch. And I looked at him, I said, Jimmy, I bet you haven't been to school, have you? He said, you come and ask the nun, come on. And I said, oh, well, Mum told me to go and get some things. So I walked down to the, and I was about to, you know, to go, and then the Mother Supreme came across, and he said, hello, my child, how are you? I said, Mom, all right, thank you. And I said, how's my brother coming along? He said, my child, this is the first time in 6 weeks that I've seen him. He hasn't been going to school for 6 weeks. He goes on the mine with other kids, and God knows, you know, playing around, and he said to me, he dared me to go there. Okay. Once my dad saw him in the streets, and he said, what are you doing here? Him and my older brother. He said, oh, I come to get some meat for the nuns. He said, on Friday. So he said, get in the car. And he took him, he said, he hasn't been there for about 5 weeks. But you know, my brother, if he sees something, no matter what it was, he'll do it with his hands. He was one wonder. You know, you couldn't believe it, that he could do so many things with his hands. Whether he learned it in the army, you know, when he was, you know, when he went in or what, but it was really unreal how he does things. Everything, you know, pots, pan, or whatever, Whatever you ask him to do, he knew it. It was wonderful. I loved him. He was a wonderful brother to me. He was.
Who were the nuns there? What order? What school did you go to then?
It was St. Mary's, they call it, in Broken Hill.
Was it the Mercy Nuns or...?
Well, it was a Catholic school, you know, so Simon, my son went to Morris Brothers in Ashfield, and my daughter went to St. Mary's in Parramatta Road, Concord. She went to school there. Yeah, actually, my son went with Dan till he was old enough to go to Murray's Brothers in Nashville.
Where is your favourite location in? Like, your heart belongs in Broken Hill. That's where you feel like you are from.
Yeah, that's right. That's where actually my... I love Broken Hill. Okay. I was there for 10 years. I never... excuse me. I never been under the mountain. When that club we went, that's all Sydney people, we went under the mountain. And you know, I couldn't believe it, that they were living in such a conditions. Mm. A little thing, you know, no wonder so many people get killed in the mountains. Mm. Oh, it was terrible.
Did many get killed?
Oh, God, yes, yes.
Who owned the mines?
There were several mines. I don't know who owned them, but when we went under the ground there...
This
is me here. And, you know, the when we the guard that was taking us around, he said years ago there was a union there. There's no union there. He said all the mines now belong to one person. And he said, you can drop dead, you can't complain. If you complain, out you go, another one come in. There's nobody to find them there. He said, things are very hard. He said, you can drop dead. He said, they're still, you know, from work. And he said, if you can't do something, you got to kill yourself doing it. He said, you can't complain or anything. That's what the bloke said to us that was taking us around. I don't know, I think that's been about 10 years ago. Mm. Yeah, well, yes, I like Broken, I liked it, you know, because everybody knew one another.
Have you gone back to Yugoslavia?
Just once.
And where was that?
I think, 81. And everything's different to what I thought, you know.
Did you feel connected there at all?
You know, funny part about it, I never for 1 minute thought what a long distance I came from. I thought I came just from the next, you know, town or something. It never occurred to me that I came such a long way. But, you know, my son went back, my daughter went back several times. They know the language, and they got on well, you know. I wouldn't like to live there, because you get used to these. It's everything's different to what it is here, you know. And
how is it different?
Oh, yeah, everything's different. I know I took a bus, and there was a woman in the bus next to me. We were passing the big orchids, you know. They were all olives trees. Huge olives, everything on the ground. She said to me, look at that. He said, they're even too lazy to pick them up. He said, they won't do nothing. He said, look at it. He said, doesn't break your heart to see all those going to waste. And yet, a friend of mine said, they go to cafeteria, drink and smoke all day. They don't know how they can do it. All the people, they are unable to work. And the younger ones don't want to. They go to big towns and all that. They won't do nothing. And the poor, all the ones, well, they can, they do something. But when you get too old, you can't do anything after that.
And how's your health today?
Oh, not too bad, love. Not too bad. I broke my arm when I came from my 90th birthday. I broke my arm on the top of the stairs, and that was giving me a lot of trouble for nearly 4 or 5 months. But now it's going back to normal.
You have a sense that you actually contributed significantly in terms of food, or?
Well, I worked very hard all my life on the farm, which all went to the markets. So it was especially during the war, you know, most of the tomatoes went to the Navy and Army and all that.
So you grew food during the war?
Oh, yes.
Do you want to talk about how that system worked a bit?
Oh, well, I think the agent had a contractor with the government, you know. But I know that our tomatoes went to, mostly of them, to the Army and all that, and when we grow crops of beans and peas and all that, during the war they had a contract with the agent that he died, God rest his soul, Nicola Roglio he was, and he was the carrier at that time.
What do they do, the agents and the carriers?
they took the stuff to the markets, then sell them to the store keepers, you know. But during the war, they did get a contract with the Army, and they have to supply them before they're supplied anyone else. You're on a farm, you don't think about things like that. You just work from morning to night, and it goes on and on and on. When you do work on the farm during the day, at night you do your housework, you do your washing, you do your ironing, and by the time you finish, it's up to 11 o'clock at night. You go to bed, get up in the morning. And my daughter, I think it was for work, she was very crying, or used to cry all night. And sometimes I used to go to work, I didn't know how I went through the day. You couldn't sleep because she was, and I believe that it was because I fed her, you know, breastfed her, and I believe that it was just the work and everything put together that didn't agree with her. Because she was about 15 months old when I went, and I gave her a bottle. And that was the first night she slept right through. And then I realized that it was my milk that was making her go like that. But I think it was through she work, you know, and a lot of things. You get unhappy, you get miserable, you get, you know. Get her and take her in a pram down the farm, put her outside the glass. I used to go prune up and down and get outside to see if she's all right, then go in again, go up and down. We had 7 rows of tomatoes in each glass houses. And I think each row had maybe over 100 plants in each row. And as I said, you know, go up and down and then come out and see if she's all right. That was my day to day. That was Monday to Sunday, then Monday to Sunday again. There was no, my husband used to say, a friend of mine came and with his wife, he says, Mary, she took a day off today. And then one day he said, how in the world did she took a day off today? When they went to get in the car, they saw all the clothes on the line. He said, let's go. I said, Mary, I thought you took a day off. I said, this is what he called day off, when I do all the washing and ironing and housework. That was my day off.
What did he do?
Oh, he worked on a farm too. In later years, he couldn't cope. He worked too, but a friend of mine said, she's lonely. I said, I can never be lonely. This is the first time in my life that I can really say, I really can breathe, you know, on my own. I said, this is the first time in my life that I really feel happy. Yeah. I got my children, my grandchildren, and they're there. I had, as you said, in Warriewood, I had a lot of friends, and I still have them. There are very few there left, but whoever they were. I don't know if you remember Dawn Lake, you know, with Country of Cousin, you know, that Johnny Maris, it was. He used to be, his mum was my sister's bridesmaid when she got married. Would you believe it? She's still alive. She's 96. Yeah. You know, I went to see a cousin of mine in the nursing home, in the Croatian nursing home. Gee, it's a beautiful place. The garden, everything. They have
is
to,
that at St. John's Park?
Yeah, they have to be proud of it. The grounds are beautiful. And a friend of mine said, her mother was there, she said, Auntie, would you like to see Marion, do you know him, Gerbushit? Yeah, I said, I know him. I said, I know him for the last 70 years. I went over and I said, hello, Marion, do you know me? He said, of course you know. I know you. You were Mary Bakarich. Weren't you choosy, picking up, you know? And I said, you say you know me. He said, and she said, I'm going to see my mum. You have a talk to him. We had a good talk, you know, about everything. And he has been a widow for nearly 30 years, and he did everything. He did the cooking, ironing, cleaning, everything himself. And I said, gee, Marion, you look well. And he said, you know, Mary, next July I'll be 100.
What's his name?
Marion Gerbushit. He was reading, and we talk about old times as if it was yesterday, you know. And he recognized me. I haven't seen him in years. He said, of course I know you, you're Mary Bakarich. And he got all the marbles, you know. Jeez. So you can't, you know, it's really unreal.